Before I slide in the Optane article, let's talk about the big news this week in GPUs comes from AMD. If you're cranky, you'll call it a rebranding, although I think it's a little bit more than a rebranding, especially compared to AMD's efforts in the past. But we are talking about the Radeon RX 500 series. Ryan went unhinged on an RX 580 8-gigabyte card. This is not, as we love to say, the fastest GPU ever. And AMD made that really clear.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing. Go ahead.
I mean, no, it's not a bad thing. As long as you're setting your expectations at the proper level, everything should be fine. I think it's fair to say that the RX 500 series 580, 570, 560 is pretty close to a rebrand of the 480, 470, 460. There's a little bit more. It's not a simple rebadge, but there is a little bit more involved in it. But what it is not is it is not Vega. It is not a new GPU. It is not fundamentally technologically different from what existed with Polaris in the first iteration, right? So you still have the same core counts. You still have the same memory bus width. You still have the same, you know, it's still 2,304 stream processors, 144 texture units, 32 ROPs, 4 gig and 8 gig capacities available, 8 gigahertz memory, 256-bit interface, 256 gigabytes per second available. Like, all of those specs remain the same. The only thing that changes spec-wise is the rated clock speeds go up on the 580 versus the 480.
So you get a magnificent, huge boost in performance over the 480 series.
Of 80 megahertz, which is not what I would consider to be a magnificent boost. It is 5.8% as I bring up the calculator on my laptop. So you're getting out of the box a 5% increase in clock speed. And in theory, you should be able to run at the higher boost rates a little bit longer than and more consistently than in the previous generation. Also, because the only other thing that has changed is kind of the TDP and the power structure on these cards. If you remember back to the RX 480, there was a bunch of stuff about it being 150 watt TDP card, but it never actually really ran as low as 150. It was always running a little bit more than that, and it issues with power draw from the motherboard or the 6-pin power connector.
As somebody who was circling that car for a micro ITX build, a super tiny build with a 250 watt power supply, I was painfully aware that it was 150 watts until the part shipped, and then it was way beyond what had been expected. But the 580, they've, for the overclocked 580s, they are actually, is it 225 watts, 250 watts maximum?
So the reference performance is 185. Reference setting is 185 watts. But they put an 8-pin power connector on the card. So in theory, you have up to 225 watts for the add-in card vendor to kind of make changes and be a little bit more creative with their designs, if you want to call it that. For example, the MSI card that we got in for our testing is a little bit on the higher side, $250 price point. It used anywhere from 200 to 210 watts of power playing games at 2560 by 1440. So, you know, definitely if you just look at it in that respect, you're jumping from a card that was supposed to be 150 watts but never actually was and is now a 200-plus watt video card. So, you know, it's not the end of the world. It's not like, oh, we're not going to recommend this card because it uses more power than previous card or NVIDIA's options. But it's worth noting just the difference, right? It's clear that AMD's mindset has shifted a little bit from we need to compete and make sure that we can prove we're a very power-efficient architecture to, well, screw it. Let's just get as much performance as we can and compete at the performance per dollar metric instead. And, you know, they help themselves out a little bit in that way. But keeping in mind that, like, the GTX 1060 6-gigabyte card that we tested it against is using, like, 70 to 80 watts less power while gaming. That's a significant amount if you are building a small form factor system, as you were talking about.
Well, okay, so we've got a whole slate of new cards. The RX 550, which is like an $80, I'm replacing the onboard graphics in my machine. I need a simple dedicated GPU you know, for a 4K home theater build. The RX 560, the RX 570, which may be kind of like the sweet spot for this series. Then the RX 580. should be street price around $230 for the base stock version of the RX 580. How's the performance comparing with the 1060?
So in my testing, the 1060 was still faster, not by a huge amount. I would say on average 5 to 7%. There was one instance where it was significantly faster, 18 to 20%. And then there were a couple of instances where, you know, the AMD card was either tying or a couple of percent ahead. So it's closer than it was. The 580 makes up some of the difference between the 480 and the 1060, but not all of it. Mm-hmm. I would still give NVIDIA the advantage in terms of performance in that segment. And considering that, you know, the pricing is pretty much identical between the 580 and the 1060, obviously it's going to vary depending on the partner card and the overclock settings and the day of the week that you're purchasing and all that type of stuff. it's close enough that I would still give the edge of the 1060, but AMD has closed the gap, and that's all they really wanted to do. They're not trying to make the claim that the 580 is an upgrade for 480. They're not trying to make the claim that if you, you know, this is more for if you are still on a two-year-old video card, the 580 right. is now a better option than the 480. And it's true. They absolutely were able to achieve that by improving clock speeds, increasing clock speeds at the expense of power draw to make themselves slightly more competitive against the GeForce line.
And one of the things they point out in the press materials is that if you look at Steam analytics, you're talking about somewhere in the neighborhood of a half a billion gamers, 500 million gamers, that have cards that are more than 2 years old. You know, and the, you know, people are barely, you know, the vast majority of gamers on Steam are barely using 1080p. They're not using 4K. They're not using 2560 by 1440, but they're 1080 and well below that in terms of the resolution they're playing at. So this is really sitting in the sweet spot of the GPU market, you know, and, you know, unlike the 480, you've got HEVC, H.265, 4K decoding. Well, let's talk about Radeon Chill at this point. Are you seeing any major gains in terms of, you know, reducing, I mean, we should probably just talk about what Radeon Chill is actually designed to do, which is lower the temperatures or the power consumption of the processor, right?
Yeah, so I'll be very upfront here. I have been told and kind of lectured on it several times. I have not spent very much time with it. I, you know, maybe 10, 20, 30 minutes with it. The idea of it is really interesting. It's supposed to reduce the use on the GPU depending on the activity going on in the game. Right, but it is a whitelist feature, meaning it has to be enabled on a per game basis. It's not kind of enabled globally, and it works in a way that, like, if the game detects that you're not hitting the keys or moving the mouse or firing a gun or whatever it happens to be in the game, mm-hmm. it will lower the rendered frame rate because nothing is changing on the screen or things aren't changing on the screen in any kind of pace that it should impact your experience. Right, and then the idea is as soon as you hit W to walk forward. It ramps the GPU back up to its maximum clock speed. You're rendering at full frames. And the idea is that you can lower your average power consumption and GPU temperature while not adversely affecting the gaming experience, right? So the problems I have with it are that it's a whitelist feature. It's not global. And it's in the time I tested it with it, which was like the flagship game they were showing at the time, it worked fine. It worked perfectly well, and it lowers your average GPU clock, thus lowering your GPU temperature and increasing your power efficiency. But it's a fairly small subset of games, and if you're always moving, always doing something, it's never going to come into play, right? So it really comes down to your play style, the game itself, and what kind of things you're happy with in terms of the experience. Fundamentally, I have a difficult time believing that it can have zero effect on, you know, frame variance and frame time and stutter and that type of stuff, because you are changing the clock speed of the GPU pretty quickly, pretty often. And we, even when the 480 initially launched, we saw, or no, it wasn't the 480, it was like the 290X. When the 290X initially launched, we saw huge clock speed variations in it because of thermal constraints. And we saw increased variance in the frame times and, you know, a little bit less smooth gameplay because of it. So I need to spend more time with it. I do not think it's the magic bullet that suddenly makes the RX 580 as power efficient or more power efficient or more power efficient enough to somehow compete with the GTX 1060. I don't think they're going to make up 50% of their power consumption, or, you know, whatever it is, across a wide range of games with that feature. It's neat. And if they can figure out a way to implement it in more games more of the time, that could be one of the things that helps address power consumption issues that they currently have.
This is good. Or at least, I don't know. You know, at least it's moving in the right direction. I like, you know, I've got a chance to play around, you know, with one of the 550s, and as a basic card, if you're looking, you know, especially if you want to deal with trying to build up a 4K home theater PC, little leading edge for that. But if you're buying a GPU, or if you just want to get something that's a little bit better than GPU on your motherboard, you know, they're nice cards.